Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Bethany Kelly, your host for Amazing Authors and Brilliant Books. With me today is our leading lady, Lisa Cartelli. Now, Lisa is an amazing woman. She endured a serious burn injury at the age of 9, and she wrote a book called The Heart of Fire. She also has founded Angel Faces, a unique national nonprofit organization that provides healing retreats and ongoing support that inspires adolescent girls and young women with burn trauma injuries to achieve their optimum potential. She's an amazing, inspiring woman, and I'm so delighted to have her here with us on the show. Hello, Lisa.
Hello, Bethany.
So happy to have you here. And I have to say, I was checking out her book in preparation for the show. I downloaded it from Amazon, and I read it cover to cover in over the weekend, and it was such an inspiring book, and I'm so delighted to have you here. What would you like to tell us about you, about your book, about your foundation? Introduce us a little to your life.
Well, I started Angel Faces as a result of a burn injury at the age of 9. My grandparents' home exploded, and fumbling through all those adolescent years and years in my 20s and early 30s, you know, there was a lot of pain, a lot of rejection, and getting knocked around. And I really wanted to create a space for women to go, young girls to go, where they could heal. And I put my heart behind it, and I got what I could do to get and lift that up, and created the organization. And then out of that came a book.
Beautiful. That's beautiful. So, because you were doing this work with your retreats and working with the girls for a long time before you wrote the book, right? How many years
Yeah.
are we talking?
Well, I've been at this line of work for a good 30 years, 25, 30 years.
Right.
And about 15 years into it is when I carved out Angel Faces. And then out of Angel Faces, I created the Heart of Fire book from all those experiences and witnessing resilience and witnessing people, one side getting stuck in their pain, onto the other side, girls and women who have had unbelievable challenges and struggles get right back up again and dust themselves off. You know,
yeah.
and really looking at that spindle from one end to the other was fascinating to me.
Yeah, for sure. So, like, one day you just decided to write a book. Like, how did that come about? What was the, like, tipping point for you, or the moment where you were like, okay, I'm going to invest the time, the energy, and the attention, and probably even money into writing a book?
Because my message seemed to reach across the aisle, not only with girls with burns and trauma, but people are hurting, you know, and I would see people get stuck in their angst and get stuck in that painful period in their life over the betrayal or the divorce or loss of a job, and I started to say, wait a minute, the messages I'm teaching the girls at the retreat is a message that girls and women and men too need to hear as well, because actually the point came when I had yet another mother coming to me and saying, my daughter doesn't have a burn injury. She's never had a trauma, but she has such low self-esteem and she really struggles with peer pressure. And can she go to your retreat? And I thought, but she needs to hear that. She says, but my daughter needs to hear your message. And that's when I went, you know, I need to get this out there.
Well, I'm so glad that you did, because I agree with you. There's a lot of people out there that need to hear the message, and what a beautiful message it is. So when you've written this book, what is the message, like the core message that you hope that people, the reader, will take away from your book?
I want them to understand that it's not over, that when they get that pink slip from their position, or they get their spouse who disappears, or a death of a child, death of a mother, it's not over. That is the ripe part where we need to trust that this is for the higher good. You sit with the pain, you embrace the pain, and then you get back up again. And you go, okay, I wonder what good is going to come out of this. I wonder what, you know, something good will. Sometimes it takes a lifetime to figure it out. Sometimes it takes a week. Something pretty special will happen as a result. You know, and sometimes it's like I saw a little piece the other day on TV with all these attacks that they went back to Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and his old line, you know, where he says, watch for the helpers. And it's that's what we need to focus on when we go through a personal trauma, is where is the gift? Now, you say that to somebody who's just lost their home in a house fire, or you know, just received devastating news, you know, you're not going to be very popular. Right?
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
And I think
but
sometimes
you've got...
people who do say that kind of come off as a little self-righteous or out of touch. Like, how could you possibly say that? Do you feel that there is a need to process first in order to embrace that gift?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You have to honor and grieve and process it in your head. However you do that, you know, everyone has their own personal grieving process. And this isn't just about a death. This is, you know, could be the death of like a career, or death of an idea.
Right.
Or death of, you know, a concept, or
death, the loss,
you know,
of anything.
Exactly. Like nobody ever told us, nobody ever taught us. I don't know, maybe you, but maybe your listeners. But when I was growing up, my family never said, okay, we're going to teach you how to lose, how to handle a loss.
Right.
We're going to, you know,
that's
we're
so
going
nice.
To, yeah. Nobody ever taught us that. They taught us how to get a job and where you're going to go to college and, you know, where you're going to do this and pick a good spouse and, you know, here, I'll help you buy a car. Nobody said, you know what, when you're 12, your dog that you've known your whole life is going to die. Taught us how to deal with that. So we often fumble through it. So I want people in reading Heart of Fire to look at a stumble that they're struggling with going, you know what? I'm going to trust there's a gift in here somewhere. And the gift is going to be greater than the loss.
Yeah, and what I found so inspiring as I read your book, and I'm just going to go ahead and tell you right here on the air, is that what I loved about your book is that you honored both the fact that just from your story, you could tell that there was a lot of processing that you had to do. You had a lot of coping mechanisms, especially as a child, that allowed you to function and didn't really allow you to process the significant trauma that you went through because you were so busy just surviving. And so then as you went through life, different things happened that allowed you to really process that, and it was hard to do. It's not, that kind of stuff is not easy to do, but you did it. And it was as you did it and through doing it that you really found that gift. And I was so touched by that because I think a lot of people, and I'm just speaking, you know, really from my heart here, I think a lot of people, you know, you want to bypass that awful feeling. And so you're like, well, where's the gift? Or there's got to be a gift. And then, and if you don't do that processing work, it feels very, you know, it's like you're trying to, it's like you're trying to put a Band-Aid on it, and it doesn't, you're trying to put a Band-Aid on a big gaping wound, and it doesn't really, it, that, that doesn't work. You have to actually heal it, and then that can become a strength, and it can become a gift.
Yes, absolutely, and that's a really valid point that you made. You can't run out and replace the loss, you know. You see people, I go back to, you know, dogs again, and when they lose an animal, they want to run right out and get a puppy. And and it's that process of, you know, maybe it's staying in bed for a day or two or three. Maybe it's, you know, crying for weeks on end. Maybe it's whatever that, that process is for you, but to honor that trauma with the time that it takes to get through it, not around it, not over it, not under it, because it'll chase you down.
That's right.
And somewhere in the course of your life, you have to heal deeply from that to live a really fulfilled life. I mean, yeah, can you go along and stuffing things and, you know, your whole life? Sure you can. You know, but it ends up coming out in, you know, shopping or alcohol or drugs or sex or, you know, whatever, but to have that balance, or in your health, right? Or to have that balance. There you go, and
yeah,
it sits in your body somewhere, and then you have a dis-ease, right?
Exactly. And I think that we just, you know, if you're generally a positive person and you're a resilient person and you haven't been overwhelmed by it, you're like, okay, well, let's just get past it. And like for me, I'm not real comfortable with those difficult emotions. Like I'm real comfortable and happy and joy and you know, happiness and those kinds of happy, pleasurable emotions. When it comes to like anger and grief and sorrow, you know, those, I'm like, oh, I don't want to feel that. That feels painful. That feels bad. Like, I want to get away from that. And it has been, I have found a lot of, that's just my way of bypassing it because I didn't want to have to feel. And I needed to feel in order to heal.
Yeah. It's no picnic, but once you get through it, boy, the other side, the freedom. It's like the piece in chapter 6 when I went back into the fire to face my fear. And going back into that fire literally was probably, well, it was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do.
For sure.
And that, and then get through, I had a kidney stone last week, and that was is equally as difficult, I think. But right. If you've ever suffered a kidney stone, any of your listeners have ever been through it, you know it. Yeah. But facing it head on, right? Pulling the monster out from under the bed, opening the closet door, going, okay, give this to me. I'm going to embrace it. I am going to honor it. I'm not going to give it a chair to sit on. It's not going to control my life. But I will give it the attention it needs until I'm done. And then you
and
move
that
on.
Takes such courage. Such courage to do that.
It's courage. I had a gentleman contact me. It was an LA sheriff. And he contacted me and said he had read my book. And he said, "You're one of the bravest people I know who..." And I said, "Oh, please, you're an LA sheriff, you know, I mean, that takes bravery and courage." And he said, "No, it's your bravery of your heart that spoke to him."
That's beautiful. Well,
yeah.
I would just like to take this moment to invite all of our listeners to go to Amazon immediately. Get this book. Read it. You will be inspired. It's a really fantastic book. And Lisa, do you have any information about how people can contact you that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Or learn more about you? Yeah, they can contact me through my organization, my nonprofit, Angel Faces, and that's angelfaces.com. Or they can go to my personal website. That is my name, Lesia, Kelly.com. You can reach me there through the email and through the web. Just Google my name, Lesia.com.
Beautiful. That's wonderful. So, I'm so interested. You know, I know from experience working with many authors that courage is one of the predominant emotions that needs to be present as you take this step into the journey of becoming an author, because it requires you to dig really deep. And so for you, with a story as intense and as profound as yours, I expect that it took a lot of courage to dig deep into that experience. And I'd love for you to tell us a little about that. What was that like? Was that harder than you expected, easier? What got you through that? What allowed you to really dig that deep?
Well, it was an interesting piece that had happened in the process of writing the book. There were actually many interesting, but two of them really stuck out. To answer your question, so I hired an editor, and she and I would work back and forth on these chapters. And we were getting to a point that when she needed to make a point to me, she would call me instead of doing the email thing. Mm-hmm. And she called me and she said, "We need to talk." And I went, "Oh, come on, I'm done already." You know what I mean? I'm like over this. And she goes, "Do you realize?" She goes, "There's a hole in your book." She said, "And the hole is the ages of the girls that you work with at the retreats at Angel Faces, that age group, 12 to 17, you jumped right over that in your own life." She said, you gotta write about that stuff. And I went, "Oh, you know, people get it. You know, rejection is rejection." No, Lisa, you have to write about it. And that was hard. That was really, really hard, because I'm not one that wants to just keep picking away at the wound, you know, and I want to just say the point and let's move on. You could figure out what went on in that. And she dragged me through that. And that was powerful to find the courage to do that. You know, my family was a little freaked when I told them I was writing a book, because we had such a crazy childhood that they were very worried. You know, what was I going to say and what was I going to reveal? And they were all, you know, I heard my mother out on the porch. I was listening to her. She said to her friend, "That book's coming out soon, and I don't know what she put in there." You know, nobody would ask me, right? They're all like biting their nails, like, "What did she write?" Anyway, but it was really funny. The second point was, I think it was, I'm not sure what chapter, but about when I learned the huge message in fifth grade that when you treat people the way you want to be treated, because I'd witnessed these kids bullying this other girl, but I knew, but they weren't treating me like that. And watching her incest it and throw erasers back and throw, you know, just fueling it, that I realized, oh, my God, people will treat you how you treat them. And you've got to be the teacher. And so after 40-some years, she, before the book even hit the stands, she reached out to me out of the blue, this girl.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it was like that week where she'd found me on Facebook or something. She said, "Remember me from fifth grade?" And I was like, "Oh." So, of course, I had to go in and change her name and do all that stuff. But, yeah, I was blown away. That was a gift.
Yeah. Right?
That was a little gift. The editor made me drag me through that. Look, you need to write about all these, you know, hard things. And yeah, the little blessings that came out of it.
Wow. So what kind of, I mean, you talked about having this editor, and that must have been a tremendous support. What kind of support did you get throughout your publishing process? Tell us a little about that. What parts did you feel comfortable doing on your own, and what parts did you really need help and support in?
Well, I learned that the biggest mistake you can make is to think you're a good writer, that you've got to have fresh eyes on your project who has no connection with you, who has no connection whatsoever. You know, and that was a real valuable lesson for me. I didn't get too far down that track until I learned that lesson where they said you have to have a very unbiased. It can't be a cousin's friend. It can't be, I mean, you've got to know this person cold, and you have to have a relationship with this person just about the book. That was number
right.
one. My husband was very supportive, but he wanted me back. He's like, "You're writing again? You know, aren't you done yet?" And so it was a real time commitment that I had to have.
Yeah.
And I also learned early on that I didn't want to go with a publisher. I didn't want to go with a big publisher because I was going to lose control of everything and they were going to take 70% of my cover.
Right.
And I still had to market myself.
Yeah.
So I dug a little deeper, spent a little more money, and was able to find a good cover editor, you know, a good graphic artist, and find a good editor, and find a layout person. And, you know, that took the time, that took a lot of, you know, trust. Some of the designers that I found didn't work. I'm like, you know, I'm not feeling this. This isn't feeling good. I got to let this person go, find somebody else. So it was really picking through, you know, because everybody can be a graphic designer, right? On the internet now, you
right.
can do anything. So just trying to find the professionals who knew what they were doing and trusting my gut.
Right. Right. Such an important point, too, because, I mean, I'm just going to take a moment to aside, for an aside on this. You know, when it comes to design, not all designers are equal, but every designer, just like every artist, has their style. And when you're talking about a book cover that is representing you and that is representing you and your story and your message, like, you need to find somebody who has a style that matches yours. And I tell this to people who are looking for artists or illustrators the same. I'm like, you have to look at their other work, and if you like their style, then you'll like what they're going to do for you. If you don't like their style, they're not going to change their style because this is their creative
mm-hmm.
style. So then you have to find one that actually matches the sort of creative style that you have, or the way, like, they kind of get you, or they kind of, their style picks up on nuances of what you like and how you like to present things. I think people don't often think about that, and then are often disappointed when they're like, how come the designer isn't getting it? And sometimes it's not that they're not getting it, it's just that their style doesn't match what you need.
Yes, and that's very important, especially with an editor. Because one of the
mm-hmm.
things that my editor would say to me was, you need to rewrite this. And, like, she couldn't do it because it wasn't my voice.
Right, that's right.
It wasn't my voice. And then learning that if you can say it in four sentences, you got to be able to say it in one or two at the most.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just keep going on and on where it drones when you could have said it in one sentence. Because people don't have time these days. They're, you know, they want to move through it. They don't have time to sit and, you know, read a whole page when what you could have said in two sentences and have been left a lot to the imagination.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I speak, I do a lot of motivational speaking and a lot of keynotes, and I always see it took me years to understand the power of silence, particularly mm-hmm. on stage. You know, because you're processing, you have to give that reader a chance to think about and reflect on their own life and not just what they're reading.
Mm-hmm. And you have to tap into, and I think some authors, they don't understand this, because if you tap into the reader's engagement, right, and they're engaged in your story because you're telling mm-hmm. them a story and they find themselves in there, then you don't have to connect every dot. The reader can do that and will do that. It's almost like
right.
you have to trust the reader to take what you're giving them, which doesn't have to be the whole picture, and
mm-hmm.
connect the dots that really then are the most important dots for them as the reader, right? And
yeah.
that's what I mean, I love that about reading, is that you have an experience with a book. And I feel like if I read a book and I don't have an experience with connection to the author, or I don't have my own experience, then why am I reading it?
Right. And you know, you can get 300 people to read the same book and get 200 different opinions.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
As to how that book spoke to them. I mean, I come off stage and sometimes, and I'll get, you know, lined up with, tell me more about your dad, you know, your father. I need to know more. And was he in the mafia? And was he, you know, and then I'll get that to the woman standing there just, you know, enveloped in tears and saying, I had this traumatic injury as a child. And I, you know, different things speak to different people.
Yeah, because we don't see the world how it is. We see the world how we are, right? So when we read,
right.
we're picking up on what's important to us, right?
Right, right,
which
yes.
It's so fascinating. I mean, this whole, like, the art of writing and the art of creating the opportunity for an experience in the reader is what I think is so beautiful about books, and what can be so powerful for authors is that you can do that. And, you know, you can do that in many ways in life, right? Through many experiences, you can create this opportunity for an experience through speaking, through facilitating, and writing a book is one way to do it, but it's a beautiful way, I think.
Well, and I would love for your listeners to know that I mean, I think everybody has a book inside of them. It's where, you know, they want to put it out there or not. But I think the real key is to keep going. Don't stop. Don't stop writing. Find a good editor and see the end product. See the end process of it. My editor told me one day we were going back and forth about marketing for the book, and she said to me flat out, she goes, well, you can't market a book unless you have a book, which was her way of telling me, you need to finish these chapters.
Get it done.
Get it done.
That's great.
Right?
Oh, I love that. I love that. Well, and the time has passed today, so we are getting to, like, the end here, and I just want to thank you, Lisa, for being our leading lady. Really appreciate having you here.
Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, and a special thanks to all our listeners. We are here every Monday and Friday at 9 a.m., and next Friday, or this Friday, actually, because it's Monday, our leading lady on Friday, June 9th, will be Jay Connolly LaBelle, President and Chief Executive Officer at RippleNami. She's going to be talking about CEO Tsunami, Executive Presence Changing the World with Data. That should be interesting. I invite you all to join in for that conversation. I'm Bethany Kelly, host of Amazing Authors and Brilliant Books. Thank you for listening.
And please keep reading, keep writing, and never forget the power of the written word.
Thank you so much.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.